What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge, and this is your latest Manchester United news and transfer news. So much to get into this morning. We're going to be talking about Michael Carrick's transfer targets. He basically said, never say never. He clearly wants a player. Who could it be? Neves, Ndidi, Loftus-Cheek, João Gomez. We'll go through those. Also, Real Madrid want Dalot. Cole Palmer does want to leave Chelsea. Man United miss out on a striker to Saudi. We've also got updates around Carrick talking about Maynou and why I think there's a hot take about how Amrin was actually moving Maynou towards being a big player for Manchester United. A hot take. I didn't say it was the right take. Also, Gareth Southgate wants the Man United job in the summer. A bit of a weird conversation going on about Paul Scholes and Odegaard being better than him. More on Bruno Fernandes as well. And I feel like I've missed something, but we will go through everything this morning. Thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in. It was a little bit late because it's a little bit like when you go to the shop on a Saturday morning just to get a couple of things and people keep going, oh, I could do with that. Get me a bottle of wine. Oh, I'll have a packet of sours. This, that and the other. So the list just kept getting added to. So a little bit late this morning. Also still struggling if you watched the Bundesliga watch along last night. Had a really bad stomach and I'm sort of over it now. I've just had a bacon sandwich to help it out, which is probably not the right thing for a delicate stomach, but I'm feeling okay. And I'm just going to say this because I can. Rest in peace to Catherine O'Hara. One of my favourite films of all time, Home Alone. The mum in Home Alone passed away yesterday at 71. And I've got to say, I'm at that age now where things you grew up with, they're starting to pass away. I mean, I'm how long has Pacino and De Niro and Harrison Ford got left? But it's the circle of life. It's not a circle of life unless you believe in reincarnation. It's life. You're here for a good time, not a long time. So, sort of seen a lot of stuff about that this morning. But, very, 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 well, it is sad, but it's also life. That's why you should enjoy it and watch Driving with Goldbridge. Right, let's get into the show. Lots to get into, as I said. So we're going to start off with what Michael Carrick said last night. I saw Terry's show last night, Who Could It Be? So Michael Carrick basically talking about transfers, saying never say never. We'll have to see what can happen. But if nothing happens, we knew that that would be the case. Do not for one second think that Michael Carrick is sat there high-fiving Wilcox and Sir Jim saying, I don't need anything. He does. He does want things because he's an intelligent human being and he knows that any manager always wants more. If you go to Pep Guardiola and say, I've got your Semenyu, I've got your Gehi, do you want anything else? He wouldn't go, no, you've done enough. He'd go, give me more, give me more. That's what good managers do. They always want more. If I'm managing Man United in 99 and it's the January transfer window and David Gill or whoever says, do you want another transfer? And even though I've got an amazing team, I'd still go, oh, you know what? If you could get me Batistuta, I wouldn't mind a bit of that. You've already got four strikers. All right, then. How's about you go and get me Zidane or something? You're always going to want something more. So Michael Carrick certainly isn't an idiot and he would love to bring people in. He's in a bit of a difficult position because he's an interim. He's only been there for a couple of weeks. They've given him this chance, so he's indebted to the club. He can't really go, it was really close between me and Ollie and now you're giving me the job, you bloody idiots, get me some signings. He can't do that. But never say never in an interview yesterday basically just means, yes, I would like to get somebody, but it's out of my hands. So it is out of Carrick's hands. But I liked the interview because some people say Carrick's a bit boring, a bit of a, company man. Remember that company is Manchester United, by the way. I don't have a problem with Michael Carrick just being very positive all the time. He's not that. I've seen him on the TV when he wasn't at United. I've seen him at Middlesbrough. I've seen him as a player. He's just not that personality. He just isn't a Jose. He isn't an Amrim. He isn't a Pep. He isn't a Klopp. He doesn't have that in him to be publicly confrontational. But never say never is certainly an interpretation of, if he didn't want anybody, he wouldn't say that. He'd say, I'm happy with the squad. I don't think we need anybody. We've got what we need, which is not the truth at Manchester United. We're a long way off. So the question is, can we do anything in the next couple of days? Well, I was looking at it this morning and it's hard. It's hard to see. I know Terry was talking last night about who the secret player could be. We have got 3 days left of this window, two really, tomorrow and Monday. And look, a few things I would say. One, it's incredibly late. And I sort of agree with Dylan now, no incomings. And I've always been opposite to that. But sometimes you've got to pivot based on information. And I find it very difficult to see who it could be and almost scared of who it could be, if I'm being honest. So Ndidi, in fact, this impacts the game tomorrow, actually. Chukwueze's mother, he plays for Fulham. I think his mum died a couple of days ago because I saw Osimhen put a post out about it. So he might not play against Man United tomorrow. I don't know about that. But it was in the same article about Ndidi's dad, who died, I think, in the last week or two as well. So I've not heard anything about Ndidi for a few days now. Now, it could happen, but that's sad news for him. And whether that is going to impact the ability to move or it's gone quiet, I don't know. So I think Ndidi is probably the most likely one. However, there are things that might prevent that. João Gomes from Wolves, I don't think United have ever really been in for him. And Atletico Madrid seem to be further ahead, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. I was told this morning that he could still leave, but it's not likely to be Manchester United on Monday. Who else have we got? Loftus-Cheek. I mean, Loftus-Cheek just seems like a desperation bid to go because he didn't get Ndidi. So I don't get that. The big one is Ruben Neves, and a lot of people are hoping it's going to be Ruben Neves. And I mean, I think when Amrin was here, maybe he was pushing that with the Portuguese connection. But since Amrin left, Ruben Neves has been a name that people talk about, but it's not been a name associated with Manchester United. Real Madrid were associated with it. But more importantly, Fabrizio Romano reported, I think yesterday or this morning, that he's very close to signing a new contract with his club in Saudi, who I forget who it is, a 3-year deal. So that's, well, CRK says he's already signed it. So, and Dybala says it as well. So Ruben Neves is off the table as well. It's interesting, isn't it? I spoke about this on the show yesterday morning. And thanks everybody who watched the little video I did in my kitchen yesterday. I'm just working on an idea of a program. I think I'm going to call it Sit Down. Someone said tea time, but I've always got to have a cup of tea then. I thought Sit Down because I can sit in a park. I can sit in my car. I can sit in the kitchen. So I think I might go with that. Al Hilal is the club. So thank you, everybody. But as I said yesterday morning, the transfer scam, I'm not going to get into that this morning, but the transfer scam is the ability to walk into the January transfer window where the whole fan base know we need a couple of signings and then hit the end of the transfer window and do nothing. I mean, that's just a scam. They've manipulated, moved, distracted, and ended up not bringing anybody in. But where we are now, I'm not particularly happy with Ndidi or João Gomes or Ruben Neves or Conor Gallagher. I wouldn't say I was over the moon. However, at least they were targets that are better than nothing. Differing levels of nothing. I mean, João Gomes, Conor Gallagher, Ruben Neves, I think you could actually use them over the next couple of years. Ndidi, I don't get what that would do for us for the next 2 years. But the fact that we've ignored all of those is astounding, really. And what bothers me as well is that you look at Liverpool and Arne Slot, well, they're making moves now in the last few days because they've got problems in the team. You look at Chelsea and they're making moves. I mean, admittedly, they might not bring them in January, but they're making moves on a centre-back from France. Villa have made moves. So you look at the top six and Arsenal, I think Arteta wanted to do something. Man City have done something. But the top six at the moment are all doing something. And United are sort of like going, never say never. In fact, well, we have done something. Apparently, Xerxes is staying now, which I would say is incredible. And I hope Xerxes can get some minutes. But what's that all about? Why is Xerxes staying at Manchester United now? Mate, you've hardly played any football this season. You were talking about a World Cup. And now you're just going to sit on the bench. Like, you're not going to play any minutes, mate. There are so many people that need to get injured for Xerxes to get a run of games. And you're not going to the World Cup on 20-minute cameos in the next 15 games. Because that's all we've got, isn't it? 15 games left. So I don't get that. I mean, that's just unambitious, isn't it? We should. And people will go, well, I like Xerxes. I like Xerxes. However, I look at last season and the beauty of loaning Antony and Rashford was they went off and played well and they increased their value in the summer. So we're going to sit Xerxes on his arse for 5 months and then sell him in the summer when we could have sent him off to Roma or Juventus where he would have played. He probably would have scored some goals because he knows the league like Rasmus. And his price is big in the summer. And we go, no, no, no. No one's going anywhere because we don't want to bring anybody in. And I almost feel like with Xerxes, they've said you're not going because they know if he goes, the fan base will go, well, who's coming in? Because there's no logical reason to keep Xerxes. We don't need him. Sesko's on the bench at the moment because Mbeumo can play up front. If Mbeumo comes off, Sesko comes on. Cunha can play up front. We don't need it. Mount can play number 10. We've got Lacey as well. We've got Ahmad. We've got lots of players that can play in the attacking positions. And Xerxes will not work in a 4-3-3 as a 10 or a wide player anyway. So he's got to go up front, which doesn't even suit our system. So I think with the Xerxes one, as soon as I heard he was staying, I thought, well, that is another reason to think we're probably not going to do anything. Because I think Xerxes going out the door, United love to sell to buy, don't they? United love money out, money in. So I don't know. I think it's looking very difficult to see Manchester United doing anything now. But look, if you've got any other options out there, I just can't see what the options are with 2 days to go. And ultimately as well, we've had 4 months to prepare for this window. And we're now going to try and do something with 2 days to go. And you can only do a loan deal with 2 days to go. If you're not working on a deal, you can't do a full deal. Maybe a Chelsea or a Liverpool can. They work quickly. But Man United can't do a permanent deal in 2 days. So you're looking at a merry-go-round potentially on Monday. But the quality of that player is going to be low. I mean, people are talking about Angel Gomez. I mean, if Angel Gomez hadn't been at Manchester United, I think people would be very disappointed with that. That's just nostalgic, isn't it? So, but it would be better than nothing. And what I will say is my concern will be that we hit March, which is quite a difficult month for us. I think we've got 4 games in March and we've got to go to Newcastle and we've got to play Villa and we've got to go to Bournemouth and we've got to go to Everton. So I think we've got 3 away games. February is quite good because I think we've got 3 home games in February, I think. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But anyway, lost myself there. I'm worried in March that you pick up a couple of injuries and we don't have the cover for it. Amani says, no transfers, more spin. How many protests till the Glazers and Ineos leave or decide to give a shit? Will we do it? No hope. Just on the protests, mate, I saw a few posts yesterday. I thought, you know what? We've got to give the alternative. I saw some posts about the protest yesterday. And these are, I don't know, well, they could be bots. They could be bots. I mean, the way they're writing, they could be bots. But it's out there on social media, people getting likes off comments like this. Why are you protesting and bringing Ineos into it? So Jim's put £300 million of his own money in there. He's going to build a new stadium. He's built Carrington. Rome wasn't built in a day. I've seen a few comments like that and it gets a lot of interaction. And I'm sort of like going, okay, so Jim Radcliffe's put £300 million of his own money in. Okay. We're going to build a new stadium. Okay. And we've built a new Carrington. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, get the box of tissues out. I'm very excited. How's about he spent £300 million that he put in, he spent on Ten Hag and sacked him 3 months later. So that's deleted your £300 million with Prattism, right? Sacked half the workforce and the club's not doing any better for it financially, right? Said that Dan Ashworth was the best director of football in the world and sacked him longer than he was on gardening leave. Brought Ruben Amorim in, told everyone he was going to get 3 years, sacked him 3 months later and also spent £200 million on him. Recruited best in class, but left out the CL and recruited best in ass with Berada and Wilcox because they're learner drivers. So, I mean, but it's amazing, isn't it? How people talk about, oh, Ineos are doing a good job. Who are these bloody prats who supposedly support Manchester United spinning shite like that? They've got to be bots. They've got to be bots, haven't they? Because, all right, I've done it. I've listed off the so-called positives, but come on. Let's get real. Is it true you have Italian heritage, says Rajaf? No. What percentage chance would you give us winning the league this year, says Scarecrow? I'll leave that to the chat because I don't want to waste oxygen on a comment like that. No chance. Do you go to Specsavers? I need new glasses, says Aspire. I don't know whether I do go to Specsavers, actually. I have been in the past, but I don't know whether I got them from here. Hello, Mark. Do you think Fulham will be a true litmus test to Carrick's reign? No, I think we're going to win quite comfortably tomorrow, Edrin. That's my opinion. Poor plumber, says Toby. Don't know what that's all about. The player on the left is Ruben Neves and Cole Palmer's on the right. Can't believe you don't know, says Michael Doherty. Okay, I think there's a few people this morning who've woken up in their own world. Apologies. It was $300 million, £220 million, says Rory C. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to move on because there's a lot to get into. You may have seen this. I bring this in as just another example of maybe Man United were looking at him, or maybe they weren't. I think he played for Rennes. Mate, the striker that Man United were apparently looking at. I think he's like 6'4". United were apparently looking at him. Well, he signed for Saudi, so we're not getting him. It was being spoken about a few days ago as a potential Manchester United player. He's going to Saudi. Look, to be honest with you, why not be blunt? If he's a teenage striker and he's choosing Saudi over Manchester United or the Premier League or staying in Rennes, I think that's exactly the personality you don't want at Man United, in my opinion. It's a bit like John Duran when he left Villa to go to Saudi. I'll never understand why young players who aren't the complete thing, well, I do understand that. And that's fine. Many of you would probably take the money in Saudi at 18, 19, 20, 21, and that's fine. But I don't want you at Man United because that says a hell of a lot about your personality, and it says a hell of a lot of young personalities in football these days. They're surrounded by people who are talking about this and they become about that as well. And that's not going to make Man United great again. So quickly move on from that one, but do not give a shit about players that are going off anywhere chasing that before you're even a player. That's the problem. That's why so many young players don't make it, because they get obsessed about money before they've actually made it. So no skin off my nose with that one. Don't give a toss. That doesn't bother me at all. What does bother me is that other clubs, like I say, are looking to do business in the next 48 hours, and United are just gambling on the fact that we'll be okay with what we've got. Yes, we haven't got European football, which reduces the amount of games we've got. However, we're taking a risk. Who's your current favourite player at United to aspire? There's a lot of players I like. I like Mbeumo, I like Ahmad, I like Cunha. I think there's some good young players coming through, like Yoro and Heaven. I think they're going to be good players for us for the future. I like Mazraoui, I like De Ligt. Obviously, I like Mainu. But I would say, and Le Mans is doing really, really well. Hopefully, I haven't met Dorgu again. I really like him. But I'd still say Bruno. I think with Bruno, he's always been my favourite player at United. Like, I really was desperate for us to sign him from Sporting. And it's been like a relationship. If anybody's married or in a long-term relationship, you know what I mean. It's not always sweetness and light. There's arguments, there's fallings out, there's periods of, you know, it's just a little bit like, But the point is, genuine love will always shine through. And I think in relation to Bruno Fernandes, him back in the number, I just got so frustrated with the number eight. I got frustrated with him in the midfield. And to be fair, he did frustrate me in Ten Hag's system as well. At times, he was in and out and in and out. However, I just think with him back in the number 10, absence has been, you know, the big thing. And it's great to see him back in the number 10 position. And as I've said before, look, there's lots of talk about Bruno Fernandes. I can't remember where I read it, but I read that Bruno Fernandes probably won't go to Saudi in the summer because he wants to stay in Europe. And I think that's exactly the right thing for him to do. It surprises me, talking about money, it surprises me that Bruno Fernandes took as long as he did in the summer to decide not to go to Saudi. I mean, it was 2 weeks, wasn't it? It was all across the Europa League final, the last game of the season. I'm really surprised at 30, Bruno gave Saudi the time of day. Like, respect to Saudi, you'd want Bruno and you'll offer him big money. But it really surprises me because I don't see Bruno as that type of a player at all. And whatever's going to happen with Manchester United, whether he wants another project or not, I'm feeling a bit more confident about him being a Man United player next season because we need him to be a Man United player next season. 32 in September. Apparently he wants to stay in Europe and play at the highest level. Well, Champions League football with Man United surely ticks that box. So, yeah, hopefully with Bruno, he can become a big player for us. Thoughts on Xhaka? He is the next Yoro, says Rajaf. Well, that's the player that Chelsea are after and may well get in the next couple of days. And I'm not really that bothered because we've already got Yoro. He is the next Yoro. We've got Yoro. I mean, now is not the time to talk about Yoro, but what's his pathway to the first team? Having said that, what's going on with De Ligt? Still not training with the first team. This injury is I mean, Man United's like mysterious anyway when it comes to injuries, but really important player. And look, I remember when Marcus Rashford had a back injury and Robin Van Persie had a back injury before he came to us. If it's something like that, these can be really problematic, especially when you're a centre-back and your whole game is about jumping and physicality. So let's hope the time they're taking with De Ligt is going to mean that we get a fully fit De Ligt back. Because I tell you what, that is a significant player to be missing for Manchester United for this length of time, if we're being completely honest. What's the story on Cole Palmer? Well, I thought I'd bring this in, actually, because it came in from Duncan Castles. Now, I don't think Duncan Castles is a great source anymore. But respect, it's a little bit like DiMarzio a few years ago. Remember the summer of DiMarzio with Pogba and Mkhitaryan and Zlatan? Obviously, he had a very close relationship with Raiola, and it was the summer of DiMarzio. It was pre-Romano days, and he was absolutely on it. But he's not anymore, and he hasn't been for years. And I think Duncan Castles, when we had Mourinho here, was quite good around Manchester United. Anyway, what he's saying is that he's been told that Cole Palmer has been offered out by Chelsea to numerous sporting directors of clubs, and it's to do with him being unsettled because of the arrival of Estevao, and he feels that he's not the star man anymore, and Estevao is. So I thought, I'll bring it in because there are still people out there that think that this Cole Palmer story's got legs. I'm watching Chelsea at R5 today, and it'll be interesting to see how they... I mean, Estevao is a fantastic player, but from a Manchester United point of view, you've still got to find the money to do it. And I don't know why the Cole Palmer story keeps going on. It could be total bullshit. I just feel that it is bullshit. I do feel like it's just a story that people keep putting out there because, realistically, United have got Carrick now, Chelsea have got Rosinha now, Arteta, Pep, slots. There's not really a manager story, is there? So you move to a player and you try and create headlines off that. It just feels like the last week or so we've had this Cole Palmer story, which I really don't think's got any legs in it. But from a Man United point of view, I've just spoken there about the importance of keeping Bruno. I don't need Cole Palmer in the summer, and I don't think we've got the money. I mean, I do like money. I don't know how I went all Birmingham there. I do like Cole Palmer. I don't think there's any truth in it, and I don't think we've got the money, and I don't think we need to do it. And fundamentally, we need to be spending our money on midfielders. That's where the big expense is. Because I was listening to what Michael Carrick had to say about Mainoo, and I'll read it out to you here. Quite interesting from Carrick. Say, I'll talk about the Southgate thing in a minute. Yeah, I'm trying to ignore it, but it's true. What about Mateta, Mark? Would you have took him? I mean, Mateta's going to leave Palace.
What's up, baby? It's Bretzky. And I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you got to do is purchase a $10 coin pack. And guess what? They're going to give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
It's not an... Look, if Man United went to... I'll be honest with you about Mateta, right? If Man United had done it in certain circumstances, I'd say experienced striker to compete with Sesko. But where you look at where we are now, do you want to spend £40 million on Mateta in January? No. No, I don't. We've still got Xerxes, and Bermo's been playing up front, and you've got Sesko. So between now and the end of the season, I don't think I need Mateta now. I don't. That money should be being spent on a midfielder. However, I do think we need an experienced striker when we rejig things in the summer. This is what Michael Carrick had to say about Mainoo. He says, I like the way Mainoo takes the ball. I think that's a big part of being a footballer and being the top player is being able to cope with the environment. He's come in at such a young age and played some big games in the Euros for England and Man United. So just being able to cope first off is a huge thing, and he's proved he can cope. He takes the ball, he drifts, he can play a little deeper at times. He can play a little bit higher up depending on who he's playing with. Cobby can play different roles within that, but definitely with Casemiro in the middle of the last couple of games, we've had a really good pairing and they've been a big part of controlling the team. He's very young and he's had some real highs. He's had some disappointments as well. That's natural. I was similar myself when I was young, when I came through. It's no different. It makes him better. It makes him stronger. It makes him more experienced. And he's showing that at the moment. He's a joy to watch. So look, really encouraging words from Michael Carrick there. I do think there's a little bit of work for Maynou. I mean, look, I'm speaking probably, hopefully for the majority in the sense that I really like the player and I certainly think he should have played more at the start of the season. However, there is a little bit of work to do there. I see it in this chat. I certainly see it more on social media. There are people out there that don't rate Maynou. They've almost made their mind up on him. So there's a little bit of work on Maynou's side, I think. I mean, look, obviously the T-shirt thing, some of the social media interactions. You don't want to see that because that's a road Garnacho went down. And I don't think Maynou's even walking down that road. But I think some people try to say that he is. I don't think he is. What Maynou needs to do is what I said after the Man City game. He played well against Man City, but realistically, it doesn't really matter to me if he plays well against Man City and Arsenal. It's about what he's doing for the rest of the season. He has to be consistent. This is a great opportunity. If he wants to go to the World Cup, he's got to be consistent. I don't really care about him going to the World Cup, if I'm being honest. If he goes, good. If he doesn't, gets the summer off. But what he's got to do is perform consistently. And that's the most important thing. And he's got a great opportunity to do that in a midfield three with Bruno and Casemiro next to him. There's good experience there for a young player. So let's see what he can do over the next few weeks. It's not like a new signing, though. I've heard of people saying, like, Maynou being back's like a new signing. Well, it's not. We needed midfielders when we were playing a midfield two. We're now playing a midfield three. So by default, you still need midfielders. We still need midfielders. Maynou is not like a new signing. He's just gone into a different system where we still need midfielders. So I do like him. I mean, what I would say is that we are a little bit short if Maynou picks up an injury or Casemiro picks up an injury. It's very clear that Ugarte, well, we saw it last week against Arsenal. I thought Casemiro and Maynou in the last 20 minutes were blowing out their arse. It was a hard game. There was a lot going on mentally and it was a hard game. And the fact that he didn't trust Ugarte for even 10 minutes just shows you a lot about what Carrick thinks about Ugarte. I don't think Amrem rated Ugarte. So that's what you're left with if either of Casemiro or Maynou get injured. So look, that we've got to maybe, I mean, if we are comfortable tomorrow, you're going to have to use Ugarte. We can't, we don't want to be picking up injuries, really. Mark, in the Fulham preview, you said Bruno replaced missing Pogba McTominay, but isn't that the issue? You don't buy a 10 to fix a problem at the six, says Kev United. Yeah, but if you remember, Kev, Bruno's actually started in the midfield in his first game with Ollie, didn't he? So, yeah, I don't see it as that. I think you're being a bit too literal there that Pogba and McTominay were injured and we bought a number 10 instead of a midfielder. I think we bought Bruno in because Pogba and McTominay, certainly Pogba was seen as a more attacking element that Man United needed. I can't remember who the other midfielders we would have had at that time. I presume Matic was still here and I imagine Fred was here, so he probably felt that the team needed more attacking elements in the midfield and that's why we went for Bruno. If we had a competent CEO and director of football who had a decent transfer strategy, then the January transfer window would be planned and not an apparent panic window, says Dirty Deeds. Yeah, look, United, I mean, look, if we don't do any business before Monday or we do business on Monday, it will be panic and it will be a poor window. And what you're really dealing with here is a CEO and a director of football who are lazy, who are not doing their job, who are basically puppets. Because I'm sure it's coming from Sir Jim and Joel Glazer, we don't want to spend money in January. And they've probably just gone, well, that's an easy job for me then. I've just got to spin the plates of the press and the fans because we're not doing anything. However, if they were good at their job, they'd be saying, well, look, I know you don't want to spend any money, but my job as a CEO and a director of football is not just to be a puppet to you. My job is to present you with evidence and persuade you. So I'm going to do that. You're saying you don't want to spend money in January. We have got areas of this team that are weak. and these are options that we can go for that I think will improve the team. What we're hearing is United haven't bothered to do that. Wilcox and Berarda have just gone, no, we don't want to spend. They've not actually done anything. Which again, look, so Jim Radcliffe and Joel Glazer, as owners of the football club, can say we're not spending in January. But a decent director of football and CEO don't just go, okay. They actually go, well, look, I'm not doing my job if I'm not actually, I can't just be a puppet. I've got to put forward strategies and ideas. Otherwise, when I fail, I'll fail quietly instead of actually doing my job. But they don't. They just don't. I think I have something to help get rid of the Glazers. Are you interested, says Gummy? Well, why don't you tell us all? And thoughts, I've done that one as well. Have something to help get rid of the Glazers, says Gummy. Yeah, okay. Just tell everybody. Okay, moving on. What about the Southgate story? So I'm going to read you this verbatim. Thanks everyone who's tuning in this morning. Make sure you smash a like and subscribe. So this is coming in from TalkSport's Alex Crook. I'll say no more. Gareth Southgate tipped to take new job in the summer by key ally. He may well make a comeback to the touchline next summer. Manchester United have previously been linked to an interest in Southgate. It was believed that he, along with Glasner and Iriola, were potential replacements for the sacked Ruben Amorim. All I'm going to say is that I am not going to have any sleepless nights about that. If Manchester United, I would give Carrick a 10-year deal over Southgate, and I don't even want to give the job to Carrick at the moment. So there is no, I want to make it very, very clear. I would give the job to Carrick over Southgate. And as I say, I'm not convinced that doing that's the right thing to do for Man United's future. So I'm not worried about Southgate, because that the good thing about, and this is quite surprising for me, because normally I might react to that and go, I told you. Look, there's no doubt that Ineos have considered Southgate over the last 18 months on maybe more than one occasion. So look, fair's fair, Southgate's available, etc. However, when you've got an ex-player in the job and you let them go for Southgate, that can't happen. So I'm quite relaxed about Southgate and Man United's job, because there's just no way. Well, I say no way. With this ownership, you never know. But it would be extremely unlikely that you would go from Carrick to Southgate. I think the good thing about Carrick is that if he puts himself in a position to have the job, you can't, if you're not going to give him the job, basically the only way you can't give Carrick the job is if you give it to somebody that's clearly better than him. So if Carrick does really well and people are saying give him the job, but then Luis Enrique or Tuchel or Ancelotti are available and they want it and you give it to one of them, people can't really moan. They might have a preference, but you can't really moan if Michael Carrick, who had a couple of years at Middlesbrough and a few months at Man United and is massively inexperienced, you can't build the team around that when you've got someone like Luis Enrique who wants the job, or Tuchel or Ancelotti. So I think the positive about Carrick is we surely can't give the job to somebody that's inexperienced or not very good. And when I say inexperienced, I mean big club. Southgate, not experienced at big clubs. And Iriola and Glasner, they're not experienced. So I'm not worried about that at all. Also, I think Southgate would be perfect for Palace. He used to play for them. Glasner's going to leave. That's the place that Southgate should be going. So I'm not worried about it. And some people might be, you know, spilling their coffee going, what? Goldbridge not making a big deal out of a Southgate link. But actually, I think the positive of Carrick doing well is I think it will kill off all these crappy coaches being linked to us, because as long as Carrick keeps doing well and gets considered for the job, they can only replace him with something that's better than Carrick, and Southgate would be worse. So hi Mark, hope you're good. Man United's midfield apart from Cobby will most likely be gone in the summer. Who realistically would you sign as replacements, as Kai? I've seen a lot of people talk about this. I mean, I'm still massively convinced about Stiller. I think a deep-lying playmaker who gets stuck in, who is a leader, a focal point of that Stuttgart team, I think he's a very interesting player. And I'd be very surprised if Favel isn't pushing that big time. So I'd like to see Stiller as a bit of an outside-the-box option. I'd be really excited. I would go as far as, well, I wouldn't go this far, but if you've been watching the United stand long enough and you go back about 6.5 years, it was the summer and I was obsessed with a player from Sporting called Bruno Fernandes. And not a lot of people knew loads about him, but I was like, this player, when you look at how he plays for Sporting and what he does, he would be transformative for Manchester United. And lo and behold, he was. I would say the same about Stiller at Stuttgart. I think if we don't get him, he's going to end up at someone like Real Madrid, maybe another Premier League team, and he will be a really, really good player. So I like Stiller. On the other hand, I wouldn't be surprised if we went for two out of the Anderson, Wharton and Belaba trilogy. I wouldn't be surprised if we went for two of those as well. What about Dalot and Real Madrid, says the attack? Well, okay. So, I mean, I don't know whether I've actually got this somewhere. It'd be better if I did. Where is it? Dalot. I don't think I did. Okay, so a couple of Spanish reports saying that they like Dalot in Real Madrid. And Football Watch Along says you said it about Sancho too. Mate, I also said it about Ugarte. I didn't say that... Well, no, I didn't say that Sancho would be as... No. You're wrong. I don't know why you do using capital letters as well. I will completely own it, like everybody else should in life, that nobody's right all the time. I can't stand people who try to pretend that they're right about everything because everybody makes mistakes and gets things wrong. But I never spoke about Jadon Sancho the way I spoke about Bruno Fernandes at Sporting. That was an obsession with Bruno. You had to be watching the channel at the time. Maybe you weren't, but that went on for about 8 months. It was an obsession. I was obsessed. And I didn't think United were going to do it. I thought we'd missed the boat, literally. It sunk in Mallorca, if you know, you know. So, no, I didn't speak about Sancho in the same way I spoke about Bruno. I remember Sancho was an obsession more because I thought he was going to be a right winger. We never even bloody played him on the right wing. And also, I think with Jadon Sancho, it was more of a sensationalist signing, wasn't it? It was more of an open goal. I think Sancho was an... I wouldn't want to take credit for Sancho. I don't think any fan would. Well, no one would now. But I mean, at the time, if Sancho had signed for United and become one of the best players in the Premier League, I don't think he could sit there and go, oh, I was obsessed with that. No, he cost a lot of money. We paid a lot of wage. I mean, the wages we paid Sancho as well. Anyway, I'm not going down that road. Emily Derry says it's all very well hiring and firing managers. That certainly was done. But the other part of Wilcox and Berardi's job is to support the manager. They chose to achieve the aim set. They haven't done it, says Emily. Look, the problem with Wilcox and Berardi is they're just a couple of Sir Jim Radcliffe puppets. Wilcox failed Amrin. Berardi failed Amrin. Now, you might be quite happy with that, but they did. They did. If I'm a manager and I've got a director of football and a CEO, I expect them to support me, not support the owner. Now, that's just cowardly. The owner is in Monaco. The owner is quaffing champagne on a bike ride, whatever. Day to day as a director of football, you're at Carrington, you're working with the manager. That's meant to be your guy. And they stabbed him in the back. And I've got no respect for anybody that's like that. But they did, because they're puppets. They've not got the best interests of the team and the fans at heart. They've got the best interests of themselves. And that's why they will always default to what Sir Jim Radcliffe wants, because they are basically his puppets. Thank you, Emily. Stephen Farrell, welcome to the Members Club. Thanks for getting your badge in. Kai says, hope you're good. Man United's midfield done that one. Just going to the Dalot thing then. Yeah, just a couple of stories coming in about Dalot and Spain and Real Madrid. I mean, I'm begging. I'll pay for the Uber. I'll pay for the flights. Like, Dalot is an honest, hardworking professional. And trust me, everybody in the club just speaks about what a great guy he is. And I'm sure he is a great guy. But please, Real Madrid, sign him. Because I'm happy with Mazraoui and we could use that money to bring somebody better in. And if they want to give us 30 million, I would take it. And I think some people get a bit lost on this because they can't do the whole, I'm Glazer out, I'm Ineos out, but I want Man United to win. They can't split their emotions because they can't deal with nuance. It's like, I love Man United and I love the Glazers, or I hate Man United and I hate the Glazers. Whereas actually, you can love Man United and hate the Glazers. It's very easy. But with Dalot, I know for a fact he's a good lad, he's a hardworking professional, and he's a credit to himself for how hard he works. It's just not what we need at United for the next few years in the nicest possible sense. And he has been doing well the last game and a half. Which is strange because people go, oh, it's the Amrin effect. But Amrin really, really liked Dalot. And yet he's playing better under Carrick. So it just shows you that even if you're a manager's favourite, you can still benefit from a change. And look, what Michael Carrick's done is he's basically taken some very low IQ players and given them some very low instructions. And that's why we're doing well. Like, they've all grew up playing a back four. We're not doing anything ridiculously difficult. And I think, look, my hot take on it is this. Under Amorim, we were trying to build his system and it was going to take a couple of years. And to build it, you've got to, it's hard. You've got to learn it. What we've done is we've abandoned that and gone back to something the players know. So we've seen the improvement because we are doing something the players know. And even players that liked Amorim, like Bruno, like Dalot, like Maguire, sure, they're probably arguably playing better in this system than they were in his, and they liked him. Because under Amorim, we were building the 3-4-3. Needed more signings, needed more time, may not have worked, we don't know, but they were building something new. Carrick's just come in and gone, let's simplify it. Let's go back to what you know. Let's go back to what the fans know. Let's just go back to this. Whether there's any long-term future playing like this, we'll have to wait and see, which is why tomorrow's a big game. But Dalot is doing quite well at the moment. In a flat back four, Dalot looks better. But I just don't think he's going to be good enough for Manchester United, ultimately. So if he could move, that'd be good. Dalot has to be top two right back in United's history. Anyone who doesn't see the way he bleeds for the badge has their head screwed on wrong. This is Bing Bong. Yeah, but it's a great comment, actually. I mean, you might be being sarcastic, but it's a great comment because I think some people do get lost on that. They get lost on, if they're a good lad and they bleed for the club, that means they're good enough. It doesn't. It doesn't. Talent has to be there as well. Is Dalot a Man United player? Well, if you're of a certain age, no. If you're a young fan who doesn't know anything about United pre-2012, then you might think Dalot's good enough. I was having a chat yesterday on That's Football and somebody asked me, what legacy Premier League team would you like to see back in the Premier League? And I said, for me, it's QPR and Sheffield Wednesday. And they said, for me, it's Bolton and Stoke. And I said, well, that's an age thing. I was at school in the early 90s. So QPR with Les Ferdinand, Trevor Sinclair and Sheffield Wednesday with Chris Waddle and Paul Warhurst and John Sheridan. These were legacy Premier League teams. But if you're a bit younger than me, well, Stoke with Rory Delap and Bolton with Sam Allardyce and Kevin Nolan, they're going to be your legacy team. So it's always, I get your point, Bing Bong. I really do. I respect it. You might look at Dalot and say he's a really, really good right back because you might be living off recency of what you've seen growing up. Dalot, I mean, look, in relation to this Manchester United team at the moment, I don't think I could get any of this lot anywhere near most Man United Premier League winning sides. I mean, they're not getting anywhere near the 94 double team. They're not getting anywhere near the 99 team. They're not getting anywhere near the 08 team. You might be able to find Bruno a place in one of them. And I could probably find the bench for one or two as well. I don't think Dalot leaves under Carrick would be good for him. He's well liked by the team and that's not what Carrick needs right now for Morales' right. Anyway, he won't be leaving. He won't be leaving. Talking about Unkbridge, I was laughing about this yesterday. So this is just like a little bit topical, a little bit something for the end. I think it's for the end anyway. I feel like I haven't covered everything off. Maybe I have. So you might have seen this on social media. Is Rory Delap on the Arsenal staff yet, says Angel Boy. Well, that's a good call. I'm very surprised they haven't done that yet. So, Wan-Bissaka or Dalot? I voted Dalot on that. I still think it's a good debate. But it was a good... You know what? In fairness, it was a good debate at the time. I don't feel guilty for that. Dalot or Wan-Bissaka, one of them had to go. And I voted Dalot because I thought he was better going forward. But it was close at the time and it's still close now. Like, Wan-Bissaka is a good fullback.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for. With SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
But if we're being honest, neither of them are the right back we need at United. I mean, I'm interested to see how long it takes Carrick to put Mazraoui in, because that, to me, is an improvement. And credit to Delo if he can hold on to that position, because I think that is an improvement. Anyway, give me your thoughts about this. So, I'm on social media last night, and it's kicking off about Paul Scholes, right? And somebody's playing a clip from the 2011 Champions League final of Scholes at Wembley, and he's making loads of mistakes and he looks really slow. And somebody comments and goes, this is why Odegaard's better than Scholes, right? And I just was like, I think even Terry got involved in it. And I thought, you know what? You've failed. If you've got involved, you've taken the bait. You've literally taken the bait. There is simplistically no point in comparing George Best to Eden Hazard, because Eden Hazard playing in those circumstances on those pitches at that time wouldn't be fit enough to lace George Best's boots. But you put George Best from the 60s up against Eden Hazard 10 years ago, he's going to struggle with the fitness and everything like that. So you can never compare two different eras. It's like Schmeichel's the best goalkeeper I've ever seen. He'd be absolutely ridiculed in the modern game because he can't play with his feet. So you can only live in your own lane, basically. However, what I will say is Paul Scholes was he like 37 in 2011? And a 37-year-old in 2011 is not the same as being a 37-year-old now. I mean, it's basically 15 years of fitness, isn't it? So you can't say, well, Modric at 37. It's very different playing at 37 in 2011 to 2026. Also, Paul Scholes would have been in his prime in 2000. So 26 years ago, Paul Scholes would have been in his prime at about 27, yeah? 26 years ago. So I'm looking on social media at these people trying to make out Odegaard's better than Paul Scholes. And I'm like, to watch Paul Scholes in his prime and understand it, because at 10 years of age, you can't be sat there every week watching Paul Scholes going, oh, Faddy, this is brilliant from Scholes here. I'm looking at the distribution, the positioning, the ability to get a goal, arrive late in the box. You know, his tactical intelligence and his sat-nav feet is incredible, Dad. So that's a 36-year-old watching prime Paul Scholes, would have been 10 when Paul Scholes was in his prime, right? So if you're under 36 and you're talking about Scholes and Odegaard, get back up your mum's chuff. You're talking absolute rubbish. Rubbish. And also, even if you're 36, I'm not respecting a 10-year-old's assessment of Paul Scholes because it was very nuanced. So you've got to be, I would say, to understand Paul Scholes, I would say you've got to be at least 16 when you're watching him in the prime to have some semblance of football identity and tactics and everything. That makes you 42. So I'm looking at people like Terry getting involved and I'm thinking, unless the people getting involved in this argument are over 40, I ain't even getting involved. And I've seen Boovy, the biggest fucking... I'm seeing him on Monday, actually. The biggest shitster. I'd shake his hand and say, mate, you got people on strings getting involved in it. He's definitely under 35. So he's another chuff monster as well. It's nonsense. Don't get involved. Don't get involved. Odegaard's better than Scholes. Today, the game is quicker. 100%. But you can't take players. This is what I always say, right? You put Paul Scholes at 37... in Man United's midfield today, he's going to struggle. The game's a bit quicker. The game's different. He's going to struggle. But if you put Odegaard with the same level of fitness that everybody had in 2011 in a midfield, he ain't going to stand out either. The modern game is more about tactics, strategy. It's a game of chess. It's strategic. It's long throw-ins. It's long kicks. It's corners. It's fouling goalkeepers. The game between 1990 and 2010 was more individualistic. It was more flair. You got better goals. You got people taking people on. People live in their eras. Comparing that to that most of the time is idiotic. Even I don't like it. And I can tell you everything about the Premier League because I've lived it all. And there's no way that Odegaard Bruno Fernandes is not in the same conversation as Paul Scholes. Like, what those players achieved are consistently winning the Premier League, consistently hitting the Champions League semi-final every year. And you're talking to me about an Arsenal player that's not won anything yet. And look, Steven Gerrard never won the Premier League, and he does deserve to be in the conversation as one of the Premier League's best ever midfielders. It's not always about what you win. But on the other hand, you can't dismiss what people win. If you consistently win Premier Leagues and you start in those games, that says you're a good player. You know, Luke Chadwick had a Premier League winner's medal by being a very bit part player. But it makes me laugh. It makes me laugh. I saw somebody about a year ago did it with Roy Keane and Rodri. Well, Roy Keane's even worse. Roy Keane's even older than Paul Scholes. You'd have to be definitely 40 years of age to understand Roy Keane's career. And I'm watching someone on Sky go, for me, Rodri's a better player than Roy Keane. I'm like, what were you doing up your mum's chuff? Did she have an invisible stomach? What was your mum doing sat watching Man United play every week? Nonsense. Absolute nonsense. There is this obsession, though, isn't there? This obsession with comparing this with that. It was happening a couple of weeks ago with the 08 team and the Arsenal team. Well, we've just gone and beat that Arsenal team. Where's everybody now saying that this current Arsenal side's better than the 08 team? I said at the time, when at the end of the season, if Arsenal have won a treble, let's compare it to the Man United 08 team. But they haven't won anything yet. Won nothing. And you're trying to... I blame bloody Match of the Day and Lineker because they always used to do this. They'd always start comparing stuff from the past. And no, some things... Look, the game has moved on, but there has to be nuance to it. And I'm telling you now, there's no player in the Man United squad over the last decade that gets anywhere near the vast majority of the players that were winning titles for us. It's chalk and cheese. It's night and day. Bruno's a very good player. Where Bruno factors into the teams of the past is probably on the bench. But apart from that, look at the club over the last 10 years. Half the time we're not in the Champions League, we've never had a genuine title race. And you want to compare that to 20 years of consistently being in the Champions League and winning titles. There's a reason for it. And it's not time. We're just nowhere near the club we used to be. And that's why people are protesting tomorrow. We're not where we should be. And look, some people got what I was talking about on my video yesterday where I said it's shocking. We've got the sixth. We spent in 2025, we were sixth in the spending league and we're fifth in the wage bill. How's that happened? How has Man United fallen behind Arsenal and Liverpool and Chelsea on wage bill? And some people are knocking one out to that. They're excited about the wage bill coming down. I would love to have a squad that had Erling Haaland in it. I would love it. I'd love to have Declan Rice in it. I'd love to have Donnarumma in it. And some people would be like, wow, look, think about the wage bill. I don't give a shit. I'd have the best goalkeeper in the world, the best striker in the world, and one of the best midfielders in the world. And I've got to pay them £300-400 a week. I don't care. Some people are obsessed with the bloody wage bill. Glazerites. I don't care if the wage bill's big, as long as the players are good. It's like your mate across the road who lives in a mansion with Ferraris and a swimming pool, and you're living across the road in a wooden hut. Nothing wrong with that. I grew up in one. And, you know, and you have to take a bath in the rain, a shower in the rain, and you're going, I'd rather live it. Well, at least we're living within our means. Look at them. Look at their rubbish they throw out. Whatever. Come on. Emily Derry says, I saw Scholes at a Legends game and a couple of years ago. The intelligence and the talent was there. As it was when I saw him in 2008, there is a reason why players like Iniesta and Xavi admired him. Fantastic player. Same with Beckham. Same with Giggs. Fantastic footballers with attacking flair. And they wonder why football fans hate them, says Kev United. Big Pete would punch Gabriel out the sky on a corner, says Stephen Willocks. And Hodgie says, why am I hearing the word nuance four times a day? Because I can't think of another word. I need to whack it into... I know what I'll do. You are right. We do use nuance a lot because it's a good word for saying there are levels to this conversation, which I used to use a lot as well. Right. I'm on a thesaurus here. Nuance. Refinement.
subtlety. I like subtlety. There's subtlety to this argument. This argument needs more refinement. Yes, these are good words. What about gradation? There's grades to this. Nah, that's a bit shit. Anyway, good point. Good point, Hodgie. I'm a big admirer of Odegaard. I like his profile as a player. Very technical and beautiful to watch. But saying Odegaard better than Scholes is a medical condition, says Raja. Well, if you think Odegaard's better than Scholes, Bruno's definitely better than Scholes, which is nonsense. This is the conversation people don't want to have. Odegaard's better than Scholes. Well, okay, Bruno's better than Odegaard. And no Man United fan thinks Bruno's better than Scholes. End of the conversation. Shove up your mum's... No, I nearly said something. Don't go back up the chuff. That's wrong. At their age, it would be disturbing and criminal. But the point is, I can't talk to you about Lou Macari against David Beckham. I can't, because I didn't watch him play. So I'm not going to get involved in it. And I'm certainly not going to go on YouTube and try and say I've watched. I've seen people who do this as well. Well, I wasn't born when David Ginola played, but I've watched him on YouTube and he's definitely better than Estebao. And you sort of like go, you watched him on YouTube. That's not how it works. That's not how a player assessment works. Assessing a player is watching 90 minutes, going down the pub with your mates or going to school with your mates, talking about that player day in, day out, watching their next game, living the moment, living the time, understanding the time, watching the full games, watching the context of what that game meant. Was it a title race? Was it relegation? You can't just watch it on YouTube for half an hour and go, well, I've analysed his game and this player's better. That's not how it works. We shouldn't be having these conversations, really. Don't care how much we pay. If they are the longest in the shower, that's what it takes to pay for Man United, says One Inch Wonder. Thank you. Okay, fantastic show this morning. Really enjoyed it. Now, I've got a busy day today and I don't know whether we've got an 8 o'clock show. In fact, I don't know whether there's another United Stand show today. I'll explain why. 3 o'clock, that's football, Leeds, Arsenal. 5:30, that's football, Chelsea, West Ham. 8 o'clock, that's football, Newcastle, Liverpool. I may be able to slip in a United Stand in between. It might just be a pre-record. I don't know, but we won't be live at 8 o'clock, but I will be live on That's Football because these games all matter. Chelsea, West Ham, we could do with West Ham doing something, and certainly Liverpool, Newcastle, a draw would be... This Liverpool, Newcastle game is huge for us. If that's a draw, they're the only two threats, and I don't think Newcastle are a threat, so we could even say Newcastle win, but Liverpool dropping points today would be great. What about the Royal Rumble? I might try and put it on as well because it's on at 8 o'clock, isn't it, Ash? But it's not high on my list. Absolute legends today. Thank you so much for tuning in. We've already hit 1,000 likes. I've pinned Driving with Goldbridge. Please go and check that out. I'm back on live at That's Football at 3. Please check out Driving with Goldbridge. So many people have watched it. If you've never watched it, I think you might quite enjoy it. It's a series on my channel. Make sure you check it out and let me know your thoughts. Speak to you a bit. Take care.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SPINQUEST.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save.